You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
All right, so next into the Child Poverty Action Group, the Public Policy Institute at Auckland the University of Auckland has published a report called Relationship Status and the Welfare System in Aotearoa, New Zealand. CPAG says the report shows that the welfare system rules out relationships unjustly, punishing and stigmatizing already struggling single parents. Ryan McKee spoke with Susan St. John's from the organization about this statement and the impact this has on people in daily life. Ryan starts by asking Susan to give an overview of the report.
The report, which was written through the Public Policy Institute, Auckland University, and was sponsored by the Peter McKenzie Trust, builds on work that CPAG has done over the years to draw attention to the outdated nature of the way that the benefit system is constructed and the punitive nature of what happens when people fall foul of the rules. We think that time is well past for this issue to be on the table, for people to get to grips with and make some changes. The Welfare Expert Advisory Group also, that have just reported, have suggested that we need to modernise the system. So it was with that spirit that this report has been written, and what it does is that it outlines why it's important and how difficult it is to define what a relationship is and how serious and severe the penalties can be for falling foul of that definition.
And as you were just saying, and as it says in the report, there's a number of issues with the current structure of the welfare system, aren't there? So I was wondering if you could tell me, what would you say are the main issues with the current welfare relationship rules as they stand?
Well, if we just look at the welfare system as a whole, forget about sole parents for the moment, and think about two single people who are on a benefit who are flatting together, if they are deemed to be in a relationship in the nature of marriage, then automatically they go onto the couple rate of benefit, which is considerably lower than what they would be getting as two single people. So our argument is that the reasons to do that are now no longer appropriate. They may have been appropriate back in the 1950s, where there was different attitudes to women working and what women's dependency on men should be, but those times have now passed. If we look at the sole parent situation, she's trying to bring up her child, she's on a sole parent benefit. Repartnering is one of the ways where she can have a better future if she repartners well. But to repartner in today's environment, you have to be so careful. You have to be sure that the relationship is sound and stable before you commit yourself. And that process is where you might be accused of being in a relationship when, for you, it's not a relationship, it's just that you're exploring that possibility. If you're deemed to be in a relationship, then you can't have the sole parent benefit because the new partner is assumed to want to and be able to support you and your children. And of course, that puts many women in a very precarious situation.
I'm interested in that, and I was wondering if you could discuss a bit more what you'd say the wider impacts are, I suppose, on people's social lives and how that affects people and their relationships.
Well, our observation is that sole parents are very wary because they know that the penalties for getting this wrong can be severe. And we've got quite a draconian system set up so that you go onto the ministry's website and there is instructions there for how people can dob in. So a nosy neighbour or a vindictive ex-partner can ring up and say, look, I think that sole parent's in a relationship. Now, they can do that anonymously. On the website, we've also got a list of instructions of the kind of information that the ministry will require from the person who dobs in. And what can happen then, as a result of that anonymous allegation that she may know nothing about, an investigation can be triggered. And what we've found is that the Benefit Fraud Unit can actually act illegally by finding information out that goes against the Privacy Act. We've just had the Privacy Commissioner report on this issue and say how disappointed he was in the way that the Benefit Fraud Unit has been behaving. So, for example, it could be that without her knowledge, text messages that have been sent or accessed, or bank statements, or police records, or domestic violence records, things like that that are highly private and confidential, can be used to support an investigation against her. Or the investigators in one recent case can go and talk to people like employers or even friends without the knowledge of that person who's supposedly overstepped the mark in terms of a relationship. So it's quite ugly. And there are cases where, of course, it goes even further and a woman may end up being prosecuted for relationship fraud. And there are many cases that we have documented of women who've been sent to prison, even though they've had young children, for the so-called fraud. We're not minimising the fact that within the benefit system there will be occasions when there is genuine benefit fraud, but the use of that term is highly prejudicial. And what we argue is that most of these investigations are really best described as disputed overpayments that will be resolved one way or another. They don't need to have the stigma attached to them.
That's a really good point about, yeah, the impact on families and people. But obviously Child Poverty Action Group is a children's poverty group. I was wondering, yes, if you could discuss the impact of that on children. Does this create unstable housing situations of the parents? How does this impact the children in the situation?
Oh, in a multiple number of ways. In the worst case scenario, where she is sent to prison, for example, it could be that the children are taken into care and that can affect their life course. And we have a case that we wrote up, we commissioned Katrina McClellan, who's a barrister, to write up Catherine's story, which is a case exactly like that, where there was a four-year-old. Catherine went to prison for so-called relationship fraud, which she always denied. And of course, what the sole parents have been told is plead guilty, look remorseful, and you'll get a lesser sentence. Well, Catherine is one of these women who didn't want to do that because she says, it's just untrue. I was not in a relationship in the nature of marriage. He never supported me. He was molesting my children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole backstory there as well. But that was absolutely devastating to her. She went to jail came out the year 2000. And when she got out, having served 6 months and had her whole family life turned upside down, then the minister turned around and said, you still owe us all that money and we're going to take it back from you, from your invalid's benefit, because she was now really unwell. And Catherine said, I didn't commit the crime. I'm not going to pay that money. She spent the next 15 years in and out of court arguing this case. Obviously, she had a really good lawyer, Francis Joy Child, arguing it on her behalf, but that has meant now it's 20 years on nearly, she's had that 20 years of her life virtually destroyed. And of course the ripple effects out to the wider family are enormous.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.